B2, number 11B.
Then we could see, well, I always say we, it's not true, it's Mr. Dawley's reasoning which he gave us. He could see at that time, therefore, that every time this seed in itself was bringing forth a new idea, that at that point he could see that therefore this is not a single process, but a process which happens over, 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 over. That is exactly that what in the fifth day of creation was brought out. For the first time we have multiplication in the fifth day. And so we could see that Christianity, which is really the multiplication of everything, that through life the constant multiplication takes place, bringing forth new ideas of truth. New ideas of truth. That's Christianity says. And finally, he was asking himself, well, what is really happening? What is really the state of being? Well, what is being demonstrated? What is really the mean of the whole process is life, truth, and love. So this is science. Now, when you look now on your chart, on the matrix chart, you can see that the word of the word there, you see, is depicted through the synonymous terms mind, spirit, soul. Can you see that on your matrix chart? Then the Christ is symbolized through soul, principle, life. See? And Christianity is through life and truth. And science through life, truth, and love. Because that is what is being demonstrated. Actually, you can see that the breaks are not always just between one synonym and the next, that they overlap, because they always have to take what has been done before and take it over, so to say, and lead it on, so that the world as mind, spirit, soul is then taken on through soul. Soul appears now twice, you see, at the end of the word and at the beginning of the Christ. Soul appears again. You feel this is something we have made up? No. This is something which is in the Bible on the first page. Because in the third day, you have two creative acts. The third day, we have first, let the waters be gathered together so that the dry land appears. You see? And second, in the same third day, is let the earth bring forth herb and grass, which has the seed within itself. See, it has two creative acts in it. So this corroborates quite definitely with what the days of creation have presented. The same thing you have in with Christianity as multiplication, because the first time the term or the sense of multiplication comes in is in the fifth day, where it says, let the waters multiply abundantly. And the sixth day also has that multiplication in it. See? So that they overlap again. You see, life overlaps again with the next one, with science, which gives the sense. But after all, everything was finished. The end of the days of creation really show that everything is finished and of the nature of wholeness. So in this way, Mr. Dawley could see how the four operate within the seven. That clear? See? And in this way, you see, he could build together the four and the seven in a form of sequence. Actually, these are things, you know, you can spend months and years over it and just contemplate, and then suddenly you begin to feel like that. It's that one great flow of thought, one great flow of inspiration, which becomes clear and clear and clear. See, in the first day, and the second day, and the third day, you have your elements of creation. In the third day, or the first day, your light, second day, the firmament, and the third day, the earth. And out of these three elements is made the whole rest of the days of creation. Afterwards, it was the water that brought forth. It was the earth that brought forth. You see, the light became light in the fourth day. See, the elements were given. The word was given in the first 3 days. Then, after the elements had been given, the water and the firmament and the earth, or thought, matter of body has been given, then the moving of the Christ came in and said, well, I bring that force and force, I have the power in me to reproduce that. Soul, truth and life. So that it becomes life. And Christianity comes along and says, and I multiply that infinitely. Infinitely. See. And so in the days of creation, there is that infinite multiplication. And finally the whole thing comes to the point where it says, well, everything is done. At the end of the days of creation, when we come to the subtone of truth, as light, truth and love, nothing is being made anymore. It was all good and it was all right, and there was no more a creative act. It was being. And being of we can always symbolize as life, truth and love. Yes. So, in this way, he began to take every one of the orders, the Christ order then, and was seeing how the Christ order was operating from the point of principle until it comes down to mind. Now, I don't think I should go over all that chart, over all that matrix, because now you know how it came into being. And it's up to each one just to see what it means. See, it's no use to do that, what most people do when they somehow, by chance or by accident, they get a matrix and it falls into their hand and they look at that matrix. But who can make any sense out of it? It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible to make sense of it. I'm sorry for everyone that is confronted with this chart just out of the blue and say, look here what Mr. Dorey has discovered. It must put him off. Because this is it is the end of a whole development. It's the fruition of many, many years of thinking, spiritual culture, of investigating, analyzing the text, analyzing the date of creation, analyzing Matthew and so on, until one found so many corroborations that one could feel, yes, it is substantial, it's true, it's right. But when you know how it came about and what it meant, you see, then it's much easier. For instance, all right, let's take, just to get another example, let's take the Christ order there. You see there again, the Christ order goes out from the point of view that the Christ as the Word is manifestation. Christ is always that which says the Word manifests itself. It's that expression of itself. Christ is always that divine idea from God, where God says, I have an expression. And so the whole expression there is principle, life, truth, and love. That's what the Christ says at first. Actually, I should put this. So that at the first office of the Christ, Christ says, what am I? He tells himself as the Word to present himself. He says, what am I? What am I?
And it says, well, I am the expression of this principle. I am the expression of this principle. So, principle says, I am life, truth, and love. So we have here the word. See? It says, that's what I express. I am life, truth, and love. That's the ideal. Mrs. Eddy says, what is this ideal? Life, truth, and love. But then comes the question after Christ that he must translate itself. See, now we come to the second Christ after Christ. He must translate itself. But how can he translate itself? Translation is always that the ideal, the infinite ideal, is translated to the point of reflection. To the point where the idea comes out. So we have the ideal truth. Christ is the truth and says, I translate myself to the point of spirit. Here. See. So you have there principle, love, soul, spirit. We have seen that the translation is that the ideal comes and says, I express myself in through love, through soul, as identical, through the identical nature, in infinitely classified ideas, spirit. Then, you come to Christianity, see, and Christianity always says, but this translation must be really Christian. It must really be of that nature that it is adapted to the situation. That it is really Christian, namely that I give bread when bread is needed, and I give stone when stone is needed, not something else. And so we can see that this translation needs the love of being. And translates that love of being to the point of mind. To the point where it is the specific idea expressed. And finally, you come to the point of science, where you say, well, actually, what has to be translated? All that has to be translated is a false sense of soul, and a false sense of spirit, and a false sense of mind. All that has been translated, really, in order to be science, is that you don't believe anymore the sense testimony, and that you don't have any more a material concept, spirit, and that you don't have any more mortal mind concept. And so science is soul, spirit, mind. Is that... I warned you. I warned you. Today is the day of survival or not. But I promise you that from tomorrow afternoon onward, you see, I already put it off for a little bit, for half a day. well, you will have the glory of it. So this is how that matrix came about. Can you see it? All right. Now, can you see the following? We are still in the structure. And we had that structure of the fourth diversity. Word, Christ, Christianity, science. And we had it in its matrix form as structure like this. And now, at a certain point, about 10 years ago or so, somehow we were not happy just with one matrix. Why? Because we came across quite a few wonderful statements in the Bible, in the textbook, which show a 16-fold presentation, but which didn't fit into this matrix which John Dolley has given us with a synonymous term. They only did fix
within the 60. World in the four, Christ in the four, Christianity in the four, and science in the four. That it is. But it didn't fit into the synonymous terms. So we said, all right, that's fine. Something new is breaking also. And always, when one doesn't try to make something fit, which one should never do, I just warn you, don't try to see in any text what you want to see in it. Don't try to see the text the 7 times 7 or the 4 times 4 or anything like that. That's not science. That's not scientific analysis. The best thing is always to drop everything, consciously, and say, what does the text say? And so we began to realize, only about 10, 12 years ago, that there are other matrices. The plural of matrix is matrices. And we begin to see that each side has its own matrix. Its own matrix. That the Christ had its own big matrix. Oh, it should be bigger than that. And the rest is over there. See. And so we could see that there is a Christ matrix. We were studying something else, like the 16 epistles. So we were studying the epistles, and we could see that there are 16 epistles when we take the pastoral epistle together as one. And so we could see that there is, from Christianity, another big matrix, which is the Christianity matrix. Like this, see? And naturally, science has its matrix. A jolly big one. And that's the textbook. So, from the word matrix, which, don't take my word, but which I still feel, the word matrix is John Dory's matrix. That's my feeling at present, but I'm not going to force any conclusion on it. I only know that the prophets, the 16 prophets, give us the Christ matrix, that the epistles give us the Christianity matrix, and that the textbook gives us the science matrix. And you see, the infinite expands and expands and expands. There's just no limit where we can say, now here stop, now here ends being. Our thought goes on, just as in any other science, thought expands and expands and finds always elaborated a greater sense. So, can you see that the Christ is not only a part within the fundamental matrix of the Holy City, but that in itself has a whole matrix, is a Christ matrix of 16 points. So, I would like to show you a little bit of that. So, perhaps you stop for a while. Now, I want to show you the Christ matrix, which has come out as the result of studying spiritually, scientifically, the 16 prophets. You know there are 12 minor prophets and 4 major prophets. And so I would like to show you how all those prophets are fit together in an enormous Christ matrix. Why are those 16 prophets a Christ matrix? Why not the word matrix? Why not the Christianity matrix? Why not the science matrix? Because the overall tone of those 16 is the Christ. They all show one thing, namely how God comes to Israel.
how God comes to man. That's the Christ. So the great common denominator which we have in the prophets is the Christ coming from God to man. Is that clear? Why we are entitled to call this the Christ matrix and not another matrix. Therefore, everything within these 16 prophets must have always the overall tone of the Christ. Everything. Though they are now subdivided in 16 aspects, there are 16 aspects of the Christ. Wonderful. You know, there is not just one definition for the Christ. Because there is not just one aspect which can define the Christ. There are at least here, I say here because there are still others, there are at least here in the Christ matrix 16 definite aspects of what constitutes the Christ. And therefore, this matrix gives us that sense. What I want therefore to show is through 16 prophets, not what the prophets say per se, but what the Christ is at touch. That's something very different. Because we can read and have read the prophets over and over and over, perhaps not, but most of them we have. But did they give us a full picture of the Christ? Did we say, now I know what the Christ is? No, we didn't. Because we read atomistic sentences. Comforting, big, mighty. But they don't give us the scientific sense of it. Now look here how the prophets have given a whole sense of the Christ. Now, actually I can only pinpoint it because if I start on the 16 prophets, the earth is shaking. So, we have a first category which we can call the Word, but naturally in the tone of the Christ. What does the Word in the tone of the Christ say? It says, what am I? I am the expressing power of God. I am really that power of God, which is the only power, which is the power of good. And so I call it the monopotency of God. Mono, the only potency, power of God. See, that's the Christ. Monopotency of God. And all the prophets that now come under this monopotency of God have the same overall tone. They are Hosea, Joel, Amos, Isaiah. Always the last ones here, down here, are the major prophets. And up are the minor prophets. These all have one common denominator. I come back to it. Namely, that they want to show that God alone is power, and that there is no other power but God, and that that is the only power, and that there is no other power. Now, the second column is now a different one. Namely, gives a sense of the Christ as the transforming power. That's not nicely written. I can write nicer than that, you know. But I want to do it quick. So, it gives really the reforming power of the Christ. And here we have Obadiah. Then after Obadiah comes dear old Jonah, and then the darling Micah, and then a mighty strong, what do you call him, Jeremiah, They all have get an overall sense that the Christ is not only the only power, but that the Christ jolly well is going to do something. He's jolly well going to transform something. You see, it's a step forward. Not only saying, I am mighty, but it's going further. It said, and with my might, I transform something. You see that? Then we come to the Christianity sense, where it's not only necessary for the Christ to transform, he should jolly well restore the true idea, restore the remnant. And so the Christ is here showing in the Christianity as restoration of the idea. Something like that. You don't need to make very good notes because you can have it in my book. But it's nice to give an introduction to it. So all these prophets that come here, namely Nahum, Habakkuk, huh? You say Habakkuk, Zephaniah, and then Ezekiel. They all showing the restoration of the idea. They are not just happy by saying, I come and transform. I say, but I am going to build up until it comes who the right it is. See, it's like those wonderful sense one always has in the prophets, that God is coming as the mighty power, the monopotency, which will overturn and overturn and overturn the second column, transforming, overturn and overturn, until it comes whose right it is, until the right idea is restored. Israel is restored. Can you see that? Then comes the next one, which I tried to show, science, which show, when it comes to science, you see, always comes to showing that everything is the working of principle, really, that it is in being, that it isn't a process. And so I said, it shows the operation of principle in its idea, or as idea. And here we have those post-exilic prophets. All those who come now are the post-exilic prophets, only after the exile, you know, and they were in the exile. Israel really found herself. They really had no more temple. All they had left was just the books, which they smuggled out of Israel. And they sat around the books and they began to study. They said, we have no more temples, we have no more temple service, nothing is left, so let's think. And in the exile they really began to think about God, and it's there where really the great documents were written, the priestly documents, and now came the idea, now we have found our understanding, now we have found science, and now they talk about the restoration of the temple, all the post-exilic prophets, minor prophets. So we have here Haggai, you say Haggai? Or Haggai? Zechariah?
Malachi.
Then Daniel.